You're live with your host, Lee, on the Sophomore Project, Volume 3, The Element of Surprise. You can reach me by emailing me at SOUNERHAVEN@yahoo.com, or you can go to the site School of Self Transformation, and you can reach me that way. And you can also reach me through BBS Radio. Happy holidays to everyone. Today I'm going to attempt to cover at least two out of three areas. May not make it to all three, but definitely two of them. What I'm doing is I'm wrapping myself up as a gift, and I'm giving it to the whole globe. At no charge to you, but the message costs to send it. So I will get my notepad out, write down these principles, and begin to implement them into your life. No need to pay $3,000 to $5,000 to go to a weekend conference. I'm not throwing off on anybody, but if you get the same information that costs you nothing and then you don't apply it, why would you go spend $3,000 to $5,000 of your hard-earned money that you traded your time for and resources for and then not utilize the information for your betterment? So this is pertinent, key, catalyst information that can help anyone in any area of their life that you're going to receive at no cost to you. I'm going to start off by letting you know that there are three relationships with money that each individual has from cradle to the grave. And that relationship is: one, a balanced friendship; two, you control money or you're the master; or three, money controls you, you're the slave. Now I want to state this, and hear clearly what I'm saying. We are all one. There is but one mind. We have to move from the paradigm of separation to the paradigm we're all one, and it's all inclusive. There is nothing separate. That's an illusion. There is one mind. And we are all variations and deviations of that one mind. We are all one. We are different variations and deviations of the one God, the Creator. We're just various modes of the same one. We are not separate. We're included. It means it's all inclusive. We're all one. You may not believe this, but it's still true. You may not think that it's a fact, but it's still true. You may not understand it, but it's still true. We are one. And there is only one mind. Now, with that being said, I want to talk about the various types of money handlers. We have the compulsive spender. That's a person that has formed the habit of when they get money, they just spend it. They spend it all. Whether it's conscious or unconscious, that's the habit that they form. The second money handler is a compulsive saver. They're just totally focused on saving, 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 saving. That's their paradigm. That's their conditioning. Very rarely do they enjoy it. You know, they kind of neglect themselves. They just work and they save, save, save. I mean, it's almost like blindly. They don't necessarily have a clear objective, but they're just saving, 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 thinking that saving is going to do a certain thing for them, but they haven't established what that particular thing or goal or objective or target is. Then you have the passive spender. That's a person that's sort of indifferent towards money. They're kind of nonchalant, you know, happy-go-lucky, not thinking or processing the positive consequences or the negative consequences. But being indifferent towards money is not going to have a successful ending, successful result, successful outcome. Then you have the hippie. That's a person that's carefree and they don't worry about the money. I mean, they enjoy it. They're into the free spirit type. They do whatever they feel they desire to do whenever they desire to do it. And no one can tell them anything. Then you have the repressed spender. That person is kind of a mixture between all four of the above mentioned. You know, at one point, they're saving. At some point, they get tired of that, and then they're spending. At some point, they go all the way back to level zero and try to figure out how they can get money. And then at another point, they're in sorrow and they're depressed and they're sad because they once had the money, they didn't have a plan, and now they don't have the money. And they mope around and regret trying to figure out what happened. Why did it happen? Why does it have to happen to me? Then you have the gambler. And the gambler is just no holds barred. He just does whatever, whenever, and is not worried about the positive consequence or the negative consequence. Now, let's cover the six type of emotional blocks when it comes to money. The number one in multiple polls is anxiety. It means you just have a lot of nervousness. You have a lot of disharmony, and you have a lot of negative feelings when it comes to handling money or having to take care of business or having to give support in the form of money or supply. The next one is fear. You just basically cave in and shut down. You think that you have this bill due and you make up in your mind, and it's actually an illusion, that there's no way to resolve the situation. So instead of calling to maybe make a payment arrangement or reaching out to a friend or a family member to get help for the short time that you need to meet this financial obligation, you just basically shut down and you cause a lot of pressure on yourself. Your heart beats different. You probably have headaches. You're just in kind of like a panic mode, and that's unhealthy. The next emotional block is doubt. So if you're with friends and y'all are dining in, you have this nervousness about you, and you're not even knowing that maybe it's your last money, or, you know, you really can't afford to go at that point in time to where they're asking you to go. But on the opposite side of that, one of the friends or family members or whoever you're all dining with, they're planning on taking the tab. So that doubt is caused because you don't trust the process of circulation and flow. And you're failing to communicate physically, but non-physically, you are communicating. People can feel the negative energy that's coming off of you. They can sense that you're not your normal self, that you're not enjoying the moment, so on and so forth. So that deals with communication, verbal and nonverbal, and it deals with allowing, and it deals with being able to receive. Sometimes you have to just let go and be open to receive, you know, get past of potential judgment. You know, if you let someone know that, hey, I have this certain amount of money and it's actually for my bills, it's sort of like embarrassment, but the best thing to do is to actually communicate, because no one's going to look down on you if you say, hey, I have X amount of dollars, $400, but I have to cover three bills. I really shouldn't be going out. And probably 95, 96% chance person will say, oh, man, I got you. Don't worry about it. Just enjoy yourself, man. Relax. So I would say communicating and practice the art of allowing and learning how to receive. See, when you learn how to receive and you practice the art of allowing, you open yourself up for opportunities where good things can begin to happen for you and flow towards you. The next emotional block, guilt. You have guilt around the topic, the subject matter of money. Probably because between the ages of 2 and 7 or 3 to 9, you saw a lot of arguing, fussing, and fighting, and things that indicated pain around the topic of money in your household or in family members' houses, maybe friends' environments, different environments you were in as a child. Because basically they're saying that we're programmed from the age of 0 to 7 and up to 9. So what we saw in our childhood is affecting us well beyond into our adult years, you know, the teens, the college age years, and even as we enter the workforce and beyond into the 40s and 50s, we still haven't figured it out. But I'm talking about these emotional blocks because in order for good things or appropriate things or better things and the best things to begin to happen for us, through us, and to us, we're going to have to deal with these emotions. The next emotional block is self-neglect. You may work hard, earn your income, never do anything nice for yourself. It doesn't have to be anything extravagant, but let's say it's your pay period and, you know, you come home and you take care of your significant other or you take care of your kids, but you don't do anything for yourself. You know, like a man, you know, maybe he should get a haircut, grooming, and he fails to do that because he feels like he doesn't have enough money. Or maybe it's a female or a woman and she really wants to get her hands done. She wants to get her nails painted, but she doesn't feel like she has the $35 to spare. So she just comes and pays the bills and then she takes care of the kids, but she doesn't do anything for herself. Like, you know, if she doesn't want to get her hands done, well, she can go dine into a restaurant and get a dessert or get a meal, you know, for $12, but she doesn't do that because she feels like she just don't have the money to spare. When you do that self-neglect, it's a double negative because, one, you're investing 40 hours plus travel to and from to the job, but you don't feel worthy and you don't feel deserving of doing a simple pat on the back action for yourself. That's not going to make you respond favorably. That's not going to make you do better because basically you're putting out to yourself and to the universe that I'm not worthy. I'm not deserving of good things. So my question becomes to you is, well, why go to work? Why deal with an hour commute and people cutting in front of you and people throwing hand gestures and people cussing at you? And all of that to go to work to a place where you are underappreciated and unrecognized, and you apply yourself and you work a minimum of 40 hours every week, but then you can't do one simple thing for yourself, to yourself, to reward you for about 50 hours in travel and actually working. That's counterproductive. And then the last emotional block is shame. A lot of us have shame when it comes to the subject matter, topic, or discussion of money. The shame comes from those experiences in early childhood, adolescence, and growing into the world and maybe not having goals or having goals and not reaching those goals financially, kind of hiding or putting a mask on. All of that is included in this. And basically, you're telling yourself and you're projecting to the universe that you don't measure up. And you shouldn't be actually judging yourself in that way. So all of these, anxiety, fear, doubt, guilt, self-neglect, and shame are going to have to be addressed. Either you're going to take control and address these emotional blocks that's part of the habit and behavior, the paradigm and the conditioning, or they can continue to control you and continue to block opportunities, promotions, better quality jobs that meet your natural gifts and talents from coming in. So that's why we're going to have to deal with these emotions. Now, let's go to the next subject matter. People can make you feel anxiety and fear. If someone makes more money than you, it can be intimidating or it can be embarrassing. Let's say you make $20,000, and these numbers are not drawn to scale. This is just an example. And that person makes $30,000, and you know they're flamboyant, and they're kind of haughty. They're rubbing it in your face. I wouldn't be in a comparison because it's not an apple to apple comparison. But I would let them say and act how they want to act, because all you can control is yourself and how you see yourself, your self-image, your concept of self or your self-concept. And understand that the fact that you know them and they're bragging about what they're doing, if they can do it, you can do it too. But you have to be mindful. You have to be intentional. You have to be deliberate about what you focus on. If I was making or earning $20,000 and I had a friend that was earning $30,000, I would tell myself, if he can do it, I can do it too. I wouldn't get caught up in the emotions or negative emotions on him being haughty and him being a braggart and him being flamboyant. I would focus in on, hey, if he's doing it, I know I can do it. And so I'm going to figure out a way to do it. That would be my mindset. And another thing is, your subconscious is recording every single thing. So you're like a camcorder. And there are beliefs, there are thoughts, there are expectations, there are things that's going on that's getting into you that you're not aware of. So with that being said, that's why daily you are to put your thoughts on paper. Write down your beliefs so you can actually see what you actually believe. And see what you believe is creating your reality. And your thoughts, your habitual thoughts is helping it. But it's your belief that creates your reality. And why I want to hang my hat on that is because I just said that consciousness is the one and only reality. We are all one. There is one mind. So we all have the same access to the same exact resource, the source, creation, the creator. We all come from it. We all go through the same exact processes. That's the person that's making $10,000 to the person that's making $10 million. They all have the same access to source. The difference is in the routine and how we invest our time and what action steps we take or don't take. So we're all one. The person that's making $10,000 is no different than the person that's making $10 million. The only thing that's different is the routines, organization, the principles that the person is practicing and what they're implementing and appropriating. That's the only difference. We all have the same exact resources. We all come from the same source, the creator, the creation, and we all have access to infinite resources. We all have it. Whether we use it or not, it's on us. But there is no difference between the male and the female and the male. We all have the same everything, same central nervous system, same brain, same everything. Now, we do have different abilities, gifts, and talents that we are to barter in this three-dimensional world, but we are all coming from the same source. We are all variations and deviations of the same one source, the one big mind. The next one, people can make you feel anger and resentment. You know, a lot of people have hang-ups with people that have money. You know, they make comments towards them. They say, oh, they did something illegal to get it. You know, why I never have it and they always have money? They got to be doing something wrong. Be careful not to judge, because the judgment that you put out, it comes back like a boomerang. You know, you shouldn't get involved in the negative emotions. You shouldn't speak on somebody else's harvest, because you don't know the process they went through to get the harvest. I mean, we're all operating under universal and spiritual laws. So whatever someone's doing to get whatever they got, there's positive and negative consequences. We're not the creator, so we shouldn't judge. So what I'm saying is the anger and resentment, these are the feelings, these are the emotions that you're going to have to find out. Why? Why do I feel this way? And then you need to understand that you can't point to the outside, because the outside is just a reflection of the inside. So you have to do self-reflection. You have to go in and evaluate your inner conversation, your inner self-talk, because this dialogue is going on all the time. And if you will begin to question yourself by hunches, by revelations, by miracle appearances, things will slowly reveal or expose themselves to you. See, the only thing that you control is you. And the only person believing and thinking within you is you. Now, if you let the billboards, the radio, the television, the perfect stranger in passing, your mom, your dad, your grandparents, your relatives, the counselor, the community leader, the teacher, the karate teacher, the basketball coach, the softball coach, so on and so forth, impose their beliefs on you, impose their thoughts and their projections and their expectations on you, it's on you, because you have to look at what you believe, what you think, and what you expect, and the actions or inactions that you're taking to evaluate your situation. You can't get caught up in anything outside yourself, because you don't have any control over that. So the number one objective, even of what I'm teaching, is mental harmony. When these things pop off and they're being expressed, they are verifying, they are validating, they are exposing mental disharmony. When you have mental disharmony, that's when there is confusion. That's when there is no clarity. That's when there's discombobulation. That's where there is self-pity and self-sabotage. So it's very, very important. It's critical. I mean, it's almost life important that you get a hold of this and understand this. People can make you feel sadness and sorrow. You know, we kind of talked about the guilt and shame. If you see somebody with a peel-off roll of money, and then, like, you have $5 or you have a dollar, you actually have no money, and it's Wednesday and you get paid Friday, you become sad, and you start going through all the times that you have money, you had money, and this is where imagination comes in, and your memory kicks in. So you start rehearsing, I had $300 or $400 this time, last pay period. Where did it go? Now my friends, we're going to eat, and I'm embarrassed because I can't take the tab or I can't pay my portion of the bill, so on and so forth. Well, the law of polarity, you got to use your imagination. You got to control that emotion. You got to manipulate it. You got to flip it. You can't get involved in negative emotions and pull yourself down, because it's hard to pull yourself out. It takes double, triple the energy to pull yourself out the hole. You have to calm yourself. You have to silence that idle chatter. You have to say, hey, I had the money. I took care of my bills, or I took care of my verbal commitments, and that is what it is. I'm temporarily out of cash, but on Friday I have more coming in, so on and so forth. You have to take control of the situation, you know? And since you're dining out with your friend, if they really care about you, they can cover the tab. You can pay the money back on Friday. Or you can say, hey, I'm going to get the next one. I don't know when you're going to be free and available to go out, but the next one's on me. Communication. Communication is the key. So rather than going into a mini depression because your friend has a peel-off roll and you can't pay for the lunch or the drink or whatever, just communicate. Hey, man, I'm temporarily out of cash. I had a couple bills come up. One of them was larger than expected, blah, blah, blah. I can reimburse you on Friday. And they'll say, hey, man, I got the tab. No, 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 I insist on giving it back. I'll give you money back Friday. And they'll probably say, yeah, okay. Or they may say, you just get the next one, man. It's cool. It's cool. So the next one, hatred and depression. When you see money, when you see people with money and you don't have it or you have less, it can create where you begin to have envy towards this person. And that's bad, because it says where there's envy or jealousy, there's every evil work. We talked about one of the relationships of money, like either you control it or it controls you. And then the balanced friendship. You have to always begin to have balance. You know, money in and of itself is neutral. It's just a tool. It's a resource to help you navigate through this three-dimensional world. I mean, we all have to have it, we all have to utilize it, we all have to circulate it in order to navigate through this world. It's just what it is. But you are not going to die if you don't have money. Now, I'm not saying that you shouldn't have money or you shouldn't aspire to have money. What I'm saying is nothing's going to happen to you if you temporarily don't have it. So you shouldn't go into a funk about it. You shouldn't get negative about it. You shouldn't get down on yourself. You have no extra time to get down on yourself, especially about money, because that depletes your energy. And that depleting your energy, you're going to need 2 to 3 times or 4 times that energy to come out of the hole. So why go into the hole? Just acknowledge the situation for what it is. Call it what it is. You're temporarily out of cash. You're not going to always be without cash. So don't worry about it. Now, don't feel envy or hate towards a person that's able to have money. That person has established some habits, either consciously or unconsciously. They have a routine where they're able to handle money well enough to always have a portion of it. You know, it takes a lot of discipline. They say how you handle $10 is how you would handle $10,000. And some people beg to differ with that, but it's actually true, because I just said that money is actually neutral. It's not good or bad. It's just a tool or resource that you use to navigate through the world. So some person would say, oh, $10, oh, blah, 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 I can do this, that, and the other with it. And then they'll say, oh, if I had $10,000, I would do this, that, and the other. Well, it's true. Whatever you do with $10, that's what you would do with the $10,000. Because all money is really is just a magnifier. It reveals to you more of yourself that you didn't see. So if you usually don't have money and then all of a sudden you came into money, it actually would magnify the point of when you didn't have money. I can use myself as an example. I've been working with this for about over 25 years, but consciously I would say like the last 20 years plus, or 20 to 30 years. And I've made each income bracket from the standpoint of a job. So in high school, I mean, when the minimum wage was like $280, I remember making $1,500 in a year. I remember making $4,500 in a year. I remember making $7,500 in a year, to $10,000, to $20,000, to $30,000, to $40,000, to $50,000, to $60,000, to $70,000, to $80,000, to $90,000, to $100,000, to $111,000 in the job environment. And I've had supplemental income also. And what I realized is that when I made, let's say, $21,000, and when I made $63,000, there was not much different. And here's why. It's because of behavior, habit, and thought life. See, nothing changes just because you make more money. The change happens when you become aware of what you are doing. The old saying goes that we're all asleep. We're not awakened. And it's true, because when I made $21,000, and then there was about 2 years, I went to $50,000. But when I made $63,000, there was probably about 5 to 6 years down the road that I basically tripled my income. And I wasn't mature enough to really handle it. And so actually, when I was making $63,000, I lived worse than when I was making $21,000. That's why I can get on here and speak to y'all about this. More money doesn't make you just live better automatically. That's not what happens. You begin to live better and have a better lifestyle when you become aware of what you're doing and aware of what you're focusing on. Until those two things happen, no consistent or constant change will happen. More money will actually hinder or hurt you until you become mature enough to handle it. And I'm not telling you what somebody told me. I'm not telling you my opinion. I'm sharing with you my experience. So the first thing that you have to do is you have to become clear about your goals, especially your financial goals. Because if you do not, you will go through a lot of ups and downs, a lot of pain and a lot of hurt, a lot of sadness, a lot of missing the mark, a lot of missteps, a lot of mistakes. Financial mistake after financial mistake after financial mistake is very, very detrimental. So what I would do, if you're not in the financial position that you really desire to be in, the first thing that you got to do is you got to write down what you're bringing in, and you got to write down your outgo. Why am I telling you this? The reason I'm telling you this is because primarily the only way that you're going to have money is by violating Parkinson's law. Parkinson's law says that expenses always rise to meet income. So the only way that you can have money, irregardless of how much money you make, whether you make $10,000 or you make $10 billion, the only way that you're going to have money is to circulate less than you earn or circulate less than you bring in. I don't care if you're an investor and you get windfalls and you do this and you do that. Here's the principle. In order to have money, you will have to circulate less than you bring in, meaning the amount of income that you bring in after taxes, you have to spend less than that. It's that simple. There is no other way for you to have money. You can have multiple streams of income, but let me give you a figure because some people are probably in disagreement with this, but it's still true. It's still a fact. If you study it out for yourself, you can prove it. If you make $1 million and you spend $1 million and $100,000, you're in the negative $100,000. So what just happened? You violated what I just said. You spent more than you actually earned, or you circulated more than you actually brought in. So the principle is this. You have to circulate less than your earned income. Some people laugh at budget, but I'm sure anyone that has any financial success on a small scale, medium scale, large scale, they operate off a budget. Now, when they get to a certain point where money is not an issue or they don't think about money anymore, they may go beyond that budget and have a forecast or a vision. But they still started with the fundamental of a budget. If you don't know what you bring in and you don't know what's going out, you're out of control, and it'll always be that way. And I'm going to give you an example. When you are in the red, you don't actually get 30 days out of a month. You get about 12 to 14 days out of the month. Because here's what you'll be saying. You'll go pay a bill or an expenditure, and you'll be like, man, didn't I just pay this? Yeah, you was behind, so you made a payment to catch up, and now a new bill is due. So it's only been 2 weeks. So that's why it pays to have the financial plan at hand, the budget, the forecast, the vision to be operating out of, so that you don't add any added stress to the situation that you're already in. So I'm going to go back to this and go over this real quick. The only way to have money, irregardless of you having multiple sources of income, whatever you do, primarily the only way that you're going to have money left over is to circulate less than what you bring in. So that means that your income has to be less than your outgo. That's what it is. Then the last way people can make us feel, and I kind of covered it just now, superiority and inferiority. Let's go back to the person that makes $20,000 and the person that makes $30,000. Well, the person with the $30,000 is flexing and beating his chest and verbalizing a lot of different things, and the person with the $20,000 is not really saying anything. They're feeling, you know, kind of ashamed or less than because the person makes $10,000 more than them. And the person that makes the $10,000 more is actually bragging and, you know, going in on the person that has less. So that's the 30,000 person. The person that earns $30,000 has a superiority complex, and the person that makes the $20,000 has an inferiority complex. But how you steer clear of that is I never, ever compare myself to anyone else. I've never been jealous of anyone else. Never. Period. Point blank. I have a good friend of mine. He's been on the show. He's been a multimillionaire. I think this is his third time. He's been a millionaire, and he's went flat broke like in 2008. It took him about 4 years to get back to millionaire status again, and he went broke again. And now he's a millionaire again. So that's another thing. See, if you really earn something, that means you got the education on how to get it. You can always get it again. It doesn't mean that a negative thing that won't happen. But it's you're educated to be able to overcome it. Because we're put here to learn. We're career students. It's like we're going through school over and over again. I know we passed the 12th grade and we graduated from college, but life is a school. It's a perpetual school. You're learning lessons so you can share them with others and help others along the journey. Now, I spent personal time with this guy. I've counted in his personal home, in his safe, you know, $900,000 before. I mean, like ridiculous numbers. This guy has peel off rolls of money in his glove compartment, in his compartment underneath his CD player, so on and so forth. And you'll realize that people that are able to attract money, earn money, multiply money, I noticed that they all have like peel off rolls. So it's true. Now, I'm telling you this out of experience so you can know that you shouldn't be jealous of anyone. You should look at it as, if I'm able to spend time with this person and they have it, to a measure, I can do it too. Excuse me. To a measure, I can do it too. So the lesson in this is, don't compare yourself to someone, and always have a positive attitude that if they can do it, I can do it. Now, you may not do it the same way they do it. You have to find your gift, your talent, your ability, and find a way to be of service. And being of service is be a solution. Be a solution. If you become a solution to a problem in this world today, there is no way that you're not going to prosper financially unless you don't price your services accordingly. That's the key point. Be a solution and price your services accordingly, meaning you're going to have to feel worthy. You're going to have to feel deserving. You're going to have self-value. And when we talk about money, we may need to look at it different. You know, if you're having a hard time with the word money, you may need to use the word finances. Or you may need to use the word supply. Or you may need to use a barter system. Because in actuality, when we conduct business or we transact business, it's really not about the money. What it essentially boils down to is both of y'all honoring y'all's time. Let me say that again. When you transact business or you be of service to a person, in order to really validate mutual respect, it's really, really not about the money. It's really about honoring each other's time. Your time is worth something. My time is worth something. You know, information out here is free. This same information that I'm sharing with you, it's not mine. It belongs to the universe. It was discussed 300 years ago. It was discussed 3,000 years ago till infinity. It's not. There's not anything new under the sun. So I'm not some kind of special expert. I have a strong background in accounting and business management, and then I have about over 30 years of experience total in dealing with this, but it's not my information. I'm just a conduit that's willing to share this information to help alleviate people's thresholds of pain around the subject of finances, around the subject of money, around the subject of supply, so on and so forth. You will have to begin to value yourself. That's what I'm saying. You're going to have to get the thoughts out of your head onto paper. How do you feel about yourself? What do you think about yourself? What do you think that you're worth? No job can pay you what you're worth. They're always giving you a percentage, let's say maybe 15 to 20%. If a company pays you $70,000, that's a clear indication that you're worth at least $200,000. They're not going to tell you that. They're not going to praise you for it. They're going to utilize your skill set to make money for the company or make money for themselves. That's how it works. It's a capitalistic society. You have to understand who the major players are. You have to understand the solid rules of engagement. And you have to figure out how you can win. Take your skill set, your talent base, your gifts, your abilities, own them, continue to redefine and evolve them, and figure out how you can win. Where do you best fit? What is your best possible service that you can offer? And I'm not saying walk away from your job, although this pandemic has made it where, in the near future, that could be a high, high possibility. But what I am saying is that the job that you're in right now, you need to do a research paper on yourself and figure out how you can be a better service, how you can get a 20% increase, or how you can get a promotion. And at the same time, with those same skills, those same talents, those same abilities, those same gifts that you are owning, that you are evolving, that you are redefining, figure out how to create something on the side so that you can bring in or attract other opportunities and bring in more income. Because you have to have money, you have to have supply, you have to have resources to navigate through this three-dimensional world, and you got to be able to effectively communicate. You know, just because you don't have money at this certain date for this certain resource, you can communicate and get beyond that. I do it all the time. See, when you have many different things going on, you have this money coming in, this money going out, this money coming in, this money going out, this money coming in, this money going out, you're going to have to make arrangements with people. It doesn't mean that you don't have money, but in order to not have money, you're going to have to communicate. You're live on the Sophomore Project, Volume 3. This is a special show that's done once a month. It goes into great detail, great depth, and it's all about helping the universe, helping the communities, helping people overcome financial hardship, mental, physical, and spiritual phenomena. You can reach me through BBS Radio. You can email me at SOUNERHAVEN@yahoo.com. You can also reach me at the School of Self-Transformation. If you're interested in working with me, you can get a no-cost-to-you strategy session, 30-minute strategy session. Once again, you can email me at SOUNERHAVEN@yahoo.com. You can go to my website, School of Self-Transformation. I have a number one best-selling book. I'm a best-selling author, keynote speaker, creative success coach. You can also reach me through BBS Radio. I'm going to continue. Money beliefs, negative beliefs you may hold. I talked about the subconscious mind being like a camcorder. It's recording everything 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 a day through infinity every year. And basically what I mean by this, if you don't understand what I'm saying, everything you read in the newspaper, everything you hear on the TV, everything you see on billboards, everything you hear on the radio, everything you hear in passing, or you think you don't hear, it's all going into your subconscious mind. So if you don't challenge the subconscious, it doesn't separate the real from fake. An experience that happened that didn't happen. It is aware. It is the mechanism that is regulating your bodily functions. So it's taking in everything from your arrival to when you depart. It's recording everything. There's not anything that gets past it. That's why when you're driving on the highway, you'll be drawn to the attention of the billboard. The subconscious is recording that. So here's some money beliefs that you might have that's negative beliefs that you're not even aware of. Money is bad. Money disappears fast. Money hurts people. Money is scary. Money creates trouble. Consciously, you could have experienced this, and then consciously you could have experienced this, like through seeing arguments, fussing and fighting, you know, when bills came due, when you were like an infant. All of that stuff is being recorded. It's in your memory. It's got different feelings in your central nervous system. Now, here's some money beliefs that are positive beliefs you can create. Money supports people. That's a good one, because why do we go to work? We go to work to be in a position to meet our financial obligations. Money makes people happy. You know, and the reverse is true. Money makes people sad. Money helps people actualize their dreams. Like, in this world, you cannot, it's impossible for you to make it without money, some money. Money brings communities. Money warms people's hearts. I want to touch on bases on this. I actually missed the part. I talked about the 6 or 7 different types of money handlers, you know, the gambler, the hippie, so on and so forth earlier. These are ways to go beyond that money type, meaning you can recreate, redefine yourself and grow, because, you know, we are all about expansion by nature. If you watch nature, you know, the grass grows, the flowers come in, you know, you see the leaves in autumn, so on and so forth. So all the laws and the principles have already been established, and they work every time, just like when an airplane takes off and defies gravity. These things work all the time. So these are just some other detailed things to maybe help you expand the type of money handler that you currently are, because you can't evolve into a different type of money handler to have a better and best lifestyle. Don't save money out of anxiety. Understand you will lose money before attracting money. Likeable people attract money naturally. That's why I talk so much about communication. And, you know, I'm even willing to go beyond the stats. I think that nonverbal communication is really more around 80 to 85%, and verbal physical communication is only about 15 to 20%. But that's just my observation. But I'm telling you that people get a lot out of your body language. Price your services appropriately. Like, don't short yourself, you know. In a capitalistic society, we're exchanging value for value, and we're honoring each other's time. So, you know, if you charge $50 an hour, where you should be charging $125 an hour for your service, you're hurting your own self. And you're also kind of projecting your self-esteem, your self-confidence, and your self-image. You're saying that I'm not worthy of $125 an hour. I don't deserve $125 an hour. When in fact, that if you solve a person's problem, solving their problem might be priceless. It could be worth $375 an hour. You never know. You're just charging a prorated percentage for it, but you do have to feel that you're worthy of the service that you're offering, the labor that you're doing, and you have to have enough courage and boldness to receive the fruits of your harvest, the fruits of your labor. Let's talk about resolving, you know, traumas around the subject of money. You know, they say the first step to solving a problem is you have to first acknowledge that you have a problem or admit that there is a problem, because without that, you can go nowhere. It's just confusion, you know, being on the track, running around the track. So the first step is identification, and that comes through realization. So basically, you have to face and confront your past. You have to be willing to recall both the happy and unpleasant memories that you have about money, from childhood to youth through adulthood. And, you know, you have to be willing to call yourself out when you made, you know, missteps. You know, if you won't admit that you had a misstep, you can't go back and correct it. You know, it's called revision. You know, if you had $1,000 and you were supposed to do X, Y, Z, but you did A, B, C, then you have to be willing to call yourself out on the carpet, you know, if you don't have an accountability partner. Otherwise, you can't move forward. It is what it is. Just like I talked about, getting your thoughts and beliefs out on paper so you can see, you know, is it your belief? You know, is it your mama's belief? Your grandparents' belief? Is it your uncle's? Is it your teacher's? Is it your counselor's? so on and so forth. The only way you can do it is to get it out of your head onto paper. And they said, when you put something on paper, it becomes real. So you have to do the same thing with your financial situation, your financial disposition. You know, you have to put where you are. You can't be afraid of it. It may feel horrible, but the only way it's going to get better is for you to acknowledge it, document it, put it on paper, so you can begin to work on areas that you can work on immediately and then work on the more deeper problems down the road. Clarify your family's money history, like at least two generations, like where you're at, you know, where your mom is at, and then where your grandmother's at. And I think it helps to do it on both sides. So you can kind of see where the habits, the routines, the different emotions about money, and feelings about money and experiences that you've had around money, where they're coming from, because they're not just coming from you because you haven't been here long enough. You know, they were passed down to you. These beliefs, these thoughts, these expectations, these ways of acting are not all yours. So in order to be able to nip them in the bud, revise them, and evolve them, you're going to have to know what it is, so you're going to have to put it on paper. Also, reflect on how your friends and family's beliefs have influenced you. Now I'm going to move on to step two, how to, you know, get beyond where you're at. We talked about acknowledging it. So the first step is acceptance. Understand that it's not your fault, and it's actually not your parents' fault, because, I mean, I know, like, my mom, she was born in 1960. So, I mean, the way that she handles money is largely, probably say 95% of it is going to be based on what she saw coming up. I wasn't alive, so I don't know what she saw, but the way that she handles money is going to be, to a large extent, based on how she grew up, you know. She's doing very well for herself, so I'm sure she made a lot of adjustments, or she took classes, or because of the threshold of pain, she had to change her behavior, and she was able to make the adjustments. And the rest is history. Realize healing comes from attempting to understand and then forgiving yourself. Forgiving your parents and family members, and forgiving your grandparents. And, you know, beginning to educate yourself and begin to become the observer of yourself. I know, like, my wife will tell me, like, if I stop to get gas, she says I'll buy, you know, $6 or $8, $5 to $8 worth of snacks that I don't need that we probably have at home. See, that's a childhood habit of, you know, washing the white walls to get these snacks that I saw everybody else with. So that's ingrained in me, and it probably needs to be corrected. And I didn't even know I was doing it, but several times she's told me, oh, you spend $5 on Doritos and a drink, and we're not that far from home, and you have plenty of that at home. You know, I'm doing it unconsciously. I'm not even aware of it. That's just an example. And what I'm telling you, what I'm talking about, people that are making $10,000 to people that are making $100 million do these things. There is no final arrival. Everybody has habits that don't serve them. Everybody. You know, whether they admit it or not, there's somebody that's observed it. Like, my wife observed it, and she told me about it. And I still ignore it because I still do it, you know, from time to time. Now, these things are ingrained in us. So in order for us to really deal with it, that's why I'm sharing these experiences, so you can know. No one's infallible. No one's perfect. Everybody does this. Does this or similar things. Like, we have habits, you know. Like, you may have a family member that takes a shower, and instead of hanging their towel, they'll throw the towel on the floor, leave it for somebody else to pick it up. Like, even though they're an adult and they know that's not the best thing to do, they still do it. Why? Because it's a habit. And so I'm saying that with you. These are, we have money habits, and in order for us to feel better and do better and see better, we're going to have to go in, deal with the emotions, and change some of our habits. It is what it is. The next step is to use appreciation as a tool to bless your life. I gave you an example of me spending the money in the gas station. I'm supposed to be, I guess, a subject matter expert, but I share this with you to let you know that we all have habits. We all have behaviors. We all have beliefs. We all have expectations. We all have thoughts that don't serve us, and we got to go in and deal with them, and there is no final arrival. Like, you're not going to arrive in paradise. These things will confront you every day that you wake up. I don't care if you made $100,000 and you start making $1 million. The habit that you have are still there, and they will surface from time to time, if not every day. So you will have to deal with your emotions. You will have to deal with your feelings. You will have to deal with your thought life. You will have to deal with your routines. You will have to deal with your habits. It is what it is. No one can circumvent this process. I want to talk to you about financial IQ and financial EQ. I'm going to talk to you about financial IQ first. Financial IQ is how to earn and make money, how to utilize and circulate money. And this is important. You know, they have people that study the statistics and can give you pertinent data on how many times a dollar bill or a $5 bill or a $10 bill is used in a certain community. You know, the goal should always be to maximize. I mean, I know a lot of y'all may not have taken macroeconomics and microeconomics, but money is energy. So you want to get all out of it that you can get out of it. Like, you don't want to be wasteful. You know, you can be extravagant, but shouldn't be wasteful. So part of the process of that is maximization, meaning you want to get the most out of your money every single time. So if you can use $20 twice, use it twice. It's become $40. Even though it was just $20 that you used twice, it's like it's $40. And here's what I mean by that. In high school, you know, growing up, I used to see a Pizza Hut restaurant is next to a KFC and Taco Bell combined restaurant. And I noticed a couple times, I thought it was crazy at first, but basically, the people that worked at Pizza Hut gave the people at KFC Taco Bell pizzas, and those people gave them Taco Bell tacos and chicken. So they were trading. That's called bartering. And that's kind of what I talked about earlier, about value for value, you know, just exchanging value for value. Now, these high schoolers probably didn't pay for the food, which is not correct, but they did become creative. They was hungry and desired food. They said, hey, Aaron, we're going to ask them. One of them did. Either Pizza Hut asked KFC Taco Bell or KFC Taco Bell asked Pizza Hut, hey, man, can we trade food? You know, I make y'all some pizzas, and y'all make us some tacos and chicken and sides. And then they decided to just exchange. That's called bartering, you know. Like, I'm a coach, and, you know, one of my mentors, Jay Banks, he's a coach. Instead of him charging me whatever, $2,000 or whatever, and me charging him $2,000, and we exchanging the money, we could coach each other. That's bartering. You know, no money was exchanged, but we exchanged gifts. So that's bartering. You know, you can do that. Sometimes you can find ways around using money. Not all the time, but there are some instances where that can happen. And it's actually creative, and it's genius. You know, it's visionary, it's innovative, it's creative. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, and like I said, we're exchanging value, and at the same time, we're honoring each other's time. That's what it's really about. It's really not about the money. It's about valuing each other's time. So the next one is how to protect or procure and save your money. And then the last point in the financial IQ is how to increase and invest your money. Now let's move to financial EQ principles. One I want to add, the art of allowing, the art of allowing. See, when you are open-minded and you're receptive and you're in tune, you tune into abundance, you know, there's bridges of incidences. There's just things that happen, you know, and it's not by accident. You actually are creating this because you're believing for opportunities. You're thinking positively about ways to be innovative, ways to be creative, you know? So the ability to receive money well is important if you're going to have a higher income or, you know, a certain lifestyle. A lot of people can't receive money. You know, if you receive money, they look at you crazy, you know, when they could just simply say thank you. Like a graduation gift, like kids are expecting gifts, right? And then you give them a card with a $50 bill in it. Watch them open the card and the $50 bill. It's like they're shocked. It's just a $50 bill. But because of the environment they grew up in, you know, money was a constant struggle. They saw fussing and fighting about money. They saw feuding about it. You know, they're like, hey, we're celebrating you. We're giving you a $50 bill. But instantly they're taken back to what happened in the household around money. And that's a good example. The next thing is the ability to enjoy money and feel abundant. That kid that just graduated that received that card with the $50 bill in it, that's exactly what he should do. He should just rejoice. Wow, man, $50, man, they care about me. Boom, jump in the air, you know. Really, really be happy to receive the gift because he made a big accomplishment. He graduated from school. The next concept, the ability to trust in the flow of money. Money is supposed to be, it's a form of energy. So it's actually supposed to be simple and easy, but it's not because of the way we're taught over here in the Western community. Just like we breathe in and we breathe out, money's supposed to come in and money's supposed to go out. We're supposed to give thanks for what comes into our life, and we're supposed to give thanks for what goes out of our life, knowing that it's going to bless other people, just like it came and blessed you. It's not going away permanently. It's going to come back, and it's going to come back multiplied. That's how you have to think. That's how you have to feel. That's how you have to expect. That's how you have to act. And then the last principle of financial EQ, you have to be the ability to share money well. Like, you have to be able to give away money. I do it from time to time. Like, I'll see the person, you know, that's panhandling. I don't judge them. I'm not their creator, you know. We're all one. So if you give them a dollar bill, that makes them feel good. You know, you can just see like energy going into them. The moment that dollar touches their hand or that $2 or that $5, like it's a big deal to them. And they'll say, God bless you. They get excited and they say something to you like they're grateful for it. They're thankful for it. And that's what we're supposed to do. The next thing that I'm going to move on to is how to create a positive flow of money energy in your life. I kind of just talked about it, you know, donate money. Like you may only be able to give a quarter, but doing that, even though it's simple, it gives your mind the impression that you have more than enough. And if you do that enough times, it's kind of like they say, if you tell yourself a lie over and over again or long enough, you'll begin to believe it. That's what happens. Even if it's a dime, it's a penny, it makes no difference. Jump out there, do it. So donate money. Give money to your friends and loved ones. Systematic giving sets up the reciprocal process of systematic receiving. It is what it is. Send gifts. Always give something extra. You know, pay more than you're asked. You know, go the extra mile. You always win by going the extra mile. Stop and feel the joy when you receive money. You know, like the kid, an example I gave you, the kid receiving the congratulations and the $50 bill. Man, if that kid jumps up and he's pumped up, heck, I might give him another $50 bill. Like, I want to see you get excited if I give you money, you know? The last one is pray for happiness when you give or circulate money. The next thing I want to tell you about is the power of gratitude. Appreciation is always the answer. Give appreciation for the good that happens in your life. Give appreciation for the bad that happens in your life. Believe that when something bad happens, something good is going to follow. That's how you have to believe. That's how you have to think. That's how you have to expect. That's how you have to feel. That's how you have to express. If something bad happens, something good is coming, or a better thing is coming, or the best thing is coming. That's how you have to think. That's how you have to feel. That's how you have to act. That's how you have to receive. That's how you have to allow. Also, compassion. Compassion is very powerful. You know, instead of judging a person, try to be more understanding. You know what I mean? You don't know the circumstances that caused them to be in the situation they're in, condition or circumstance that they're in, or why they acted the way they act. Show compassion. Don't judge them. You know what I mean? If you can help them, help them. If not, don't get involved in the situation as far as judging them. You know, send good energy towards them. Say, hey, I'm pulling for you, man. I wish the same for everyone that I wish for myself. Divine health, you know, financial blessing, healthy relationships, great social life, man. Best outcomes in your career, acceleration in your spiritual life. I want you to think right, feel right, act right. You know, so always be sending good energy and be understanding. Now I want to talk to you about some more negative beliefs that could be deep in your subconscious mind that you're going to have to purge out. And I'm going to give you the opposites. So, money is an idea that you see the results of, like the wind. You don't see it, but you can feel it. So that's why I kind of talked about all the negative emotions about money. See, you don't see it like the wind, but you can feel it. So when you don't have money, you feel these things. You feel the sadness. You feel the depression. You feel the anxiety. You feel the fear. You feel the doubt. You feel the resentment. So these beliefs could silently be housed in your subconscious mind, and you're going to have to deal with them. And when you deal with these root causes, those negative emotions are going to also be removed. So I'm going to go down the list. I don't want any of the old world's goods. It is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter into heaven. Money is bad. Money is the root of all evil. It takes money to make money. Money doesn't grow on trees. Money is hard to come by. The money just be burning my hand. The money disappears fast. Money is hard to keep. Money burns holes in my pockets. Can't be spiritual and earn all that money. Money is filthy lucre. I have a sneaky feeling I'm not supposed to have money. You do supposed to have money. Money is a relationship that you will have cradle to the grave. You're going to have money to navigate through this three-dimensional world. Now, we need to begin to think new thoughts like money grows like a seed, and it does. Money is good and very good. Money is a tool you use to navigate through this three-dimensional world. Money is a resource you use to navigate through this three-dimensional world. Money is a God idea. Money comes to me frequently and easily. If you believe money is hard to get, it's going to be hard for you personally to get it. You believe that, so you're going to get that result. You're going to manifest that reality. That's going to be the reality for you. Money comes to me in avalanches of abundance. It is very easy to have plenty of money. I have wisened up and I do the right thing with money. Money is important. I can responsibly manage money. Money is a great servant. Money is for my growth, expansion, and fuller expression. You're live on the Sophomore Project, Volume 3, The Element of Surprise. This show happens once a month, a special show where we deep dive into various topics that deal with spiritual phenomena, mental phenomena, physical phenomena, and material phenomena. You can reach me at SOUNERHAVEN at yahoo.com if you're interested in working with me. You can also reach me through VBS Radio. They will contact me. You can also go to my website, School of Self-Transformation. On there, you will see best-selling books. I'm a best-selling author. I'm a creative success coach. I'm a career student. I love to learn. I teach and I coach. I facilitate and I help people improve their lives. I take you on the journey of discovery to improve any area of life that you want to improve on. Once again, you're live on the Sophomore Project. Special show that happens only once a month. It's my second program. Deep dives into a lot of things that go beyond the surface to the core. Sophomore Project, Volume 3, The Element of Surprise. Continuing down this vein, I'm going to leave y'all with several thoughts that you need to rehearse, because repetition is the cadence of the universe. In order to overcome financial challenges, financial obstacles, financial pain, financial hardship, you're going to have to take these thoughts, be diligent, consistent, and constant, and work these things until the ideal situation manifests for you. Multi-million dollar opportunities are always being presented to me. I am open to receive wealth in an abundance of ways. I love my positive and abundant life. It is easy to earn $1 million doing what I love. I am always visualizing the million-dollar lifestyle. I am a millionaire. I am always lending and participating in multi-million-dollar deals. I have a millionaire mindset. I have my money working for me. I see myself being financially successful. I have enough money to spare and share. I became a millionaire by taking million-dollar actions. I now accept earning all the wealth that desires to come to me. My mind is attuned to participating in multi-million dollar transactions. I am worthy of being wealthy. I move from poverty thinking to prosperity thinking. Money is my friend, and I am money's friend. Prosperity is naturally drawn to me. Wealth is naturally drawn to me. Riches are naturally drawn to me in exchange for my service. Money comes to me in expected and unexpected ways. I gladly embrace new avenues of income. I release all negative energy around money. My actions create constant financial prosperity. I receive the finances to improve my dreams. Money comes to me in miraculous ways. I am the master of money. I am the master of financial prosperity. I am the master of financial wealth. I am worthy of a wealthy life. I am deserving of a wealthy life. See, these are the type of thoughts that you're going to have to begin to play with. James Allen said, we think in secret and it comes to pass. Environment is but our looking glass. Buddha said, all we are is the sum total of our thoughts. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that a man becomes what he thinks about all day long. So you're going to have to begin to ask yourself, what are you thinking all day long? What do you think about most? If you're worrying about money, you are naturally attracting more situations around money to worry about. But if you stop for a second and you say, hey, this has been going on long enough. I'm not going to do this no more. I'm going to think the opposite. I'm in this position right now, but I'm beginning to change my thoughts. And I'm beginning to do all that I can do each day. And I'm going to change my situation. Because the truth is, only you can change your situation. You can go pay any guru $3,000, $5,000, $10,000. It's not going to change your situation. Now, with instruction and accountability, good content, and a person holding you accountable, and you begin to work the principles day in and day out, your situation will change. But just going to a three-day conference and or a week conference or taking an internet class and so on and so forth, and I'm not throwing off on anybody, but I'm telling you the truth, just doing that is not going to change your situation. You're going to have to do work day in and day out like you do on your job. Work on yourself more than you work on your job to change your situation. Nothing's going to happen by osmosis. You get these principles that's been taught to you today. You write them down, you go back, and you re-listen to the program, continue to listen to it till you get it, write down the information that pertains to you, that resonates with you, and you work those principles. And I guarantee you, if you do that 120 days, 180 days, 240 days from now, your life will be totally different. And in drawing to a close, I'm going to follow Mahatma Gandhi. Be the change that you want to see. Because nothing changes till you do. You have to be the change that you want to see. When you change, your world and everything in it changes. Signing out on The Sophomore Project, Volume 3, The Element of Surprise. D. Lee, thank you.